So hello and you're all very welcome to episode 2 of I Sprain My Mental Health podcast. I rocked out an episode for the first time ever, introducing myself to the world of podcasting just last week. And unscripted, unplanned, I came up with, I think it was about a 10 minute episode, and everything went okay. It was nice, it was nice. I had one listener, there's something fucking beautiful about that, there's something affectionate. So thanks to he or she who took the time to listen to this podcast. Thanks very much. I hope it was helpful. And I hope it didn't sound like too much of a fucking dick. So I had a chat with a few acquaintances, if you will, just about, people were kind of asking, well, what are you going to do next now that all this charity work is over? What's on the list next? So I thought, right, well, I said, I might go with podcasting. I said, I love podcasts myself. I have a couple of kind of favourites. I said, I'll rock out and see what we can produce in the world of podcasting. The world of podcasting, that just sounds fucking ridiculous. And so what started, my plan was, I wanted this, you know, in my head it was just a kind of a, you know, this sort of affectionate confab, almost like it's a phone call to your mates because I haven't talked to you in so long. The editing is gritty, the sound is atrocious, there's little or no effort. I just press record on my phone, see what comes out, and see if people like it. We'll see what way the conversation goes. And suddenly, within a minute and a half of this conversation, the podcast, I Sprain My Mental Health, you know, was in front of a live audience with endorsements from Sylvester Stallone. There were jazz bands and flamingos. And the whole thing and the idea had just lost a complete sense of intimacy. And that's not where I want to go with this. I'm just doing this because it's ideas that are coming into my head. And my goal now for this is that one listener that I got last week, I just want to keep he or she interested. And that's job done. That's job done. And that's kind of where we are. I enjoyed it last week. It was a different medium for me. I love writing. Writing's sort of my preferred medium. I'm confident enough to say I'm quite good at writing. I love it. It's my background. Love English. Love the language. And this is very new to me. So I may come across a bit arrogant, which is only a defence mechanism. And possibly a bit nervous because I just want to do this very fucking well. So we'll crack on episode 2 and see where it gets us. So in the first episode of I Sprain My Mental Health podcast, my one listener will know, I explained where the name came from and just kind of opened up about my willingness to talk about mental health and my own experiences and kind of what I've done in the past and why I'm doing this in sort of anticipation that my own openness will, it'll assist in my own sort of development and guidance of my own psyche and also just put something out there that may be helpful for somebody else. I can't make that prediction sort of categorically. It's just an intention and I hope it does help somebody. So I think just for the weekend that has passed, the day that's in it, I think it's quite suiting to begin today's conversation with Darkness Into Light, which happened on Saturday morning. This is a spiritual juggernaut created by Pieta House. It's about, I think it's about 10 years old at this stage. What it is, it's basically people gather in and around 4 a.m. It's obviously summertime. It's in and around the time of sunrise. And when everyone begins walking, it's obviously dark. And by the end of this this haunting stroll, it's gorgeous. If anyone's ever experienced, it's absolutely gorgeous. And anyone who's experienced that will know what I'm talking about. But by the end of the walk, the sun has risen. And it's just an ideal of hope that there's light at the end of the tunnel. It truly is beautiful. If you haven't experienced it, I highly recommend it. I think by the looks of things, it's just going to keep getting bigger and bigger. I think the first one started off with 400 people. I think there was something like 150,000 that sort of collectively took part last week all across the world. I could be completely wrong with that figure, but it is something absolutely massive. And what stands out for me on this, with Darkness Into Light, Well, first of all, it's a gorgeous tribute and gesture to those we have lost, or those who have been affected by suicide, mental illness. And I think the insupposable growth of this event, it's down to people, it's down to buy-in and a belief that this is important. I think Pieta House, magnificent organisation, they've done a wonderful job just promoting a simple platform. You know, it's not only deep in emotional value, but it's also fashionable and boastworthy for all ages. And I think that's why it works. I mean, you look at Twitter, Instagram, all the social media on Saturday morning, and it's everyone shouting from the rooftops that they're awake in the middle of the night to go walk with family and friends, you know, together in this sea of yellow, in reflection, acceptance and understanding for positive mental health. Like, it's seriously fucking beautiful. And I think if we can bottle that trendiness and pride and put it into our everyday approach with mental health awareness, we're going to be in a better place. So having just listened back to that last segment, I feel I need to expand the conclusion tied in with the rising strings that is the gentle melodies of Richard Hawley, former band member of Pulp, a beautiful man. Whose voice is like caramel and thunder, just exceptional. But Jesus, the end of that, I just sounded like a pastor at the top of a hill leading sheep. And I feel I need to expand on that point. That it was too much of a broad sweeping statement, just to kind of state out that, you know, we're going to be in a better place if we continue to buy into darkness and the light. It's too broad. I'm not happy with that. So I think to expand on that, what I mean is, with darkness into light, it works because it has integrity. And it's difficult. It is a celebration of compassion, but it's still difficult for people. I was speaking to a friend at the weekend who brought her two young children there, both under the age of 10. And beside the family walking in the Phoenix Park was another family who were holding a picture of their daughter who... You know, sadly, they'd obviously lost to suicide, and this family were still in grief. And the two children asked their mother, they asked, like, what was going on? And to her credit, she explained in the best manner to she could to two 10-year-olds what this was about, why they were there, and what had happened. And, like, Jesus Christ, what a difficult but important conversation to have. And That's what I mean by it. If people can buy into a platform like Darkness into Light as a means of introducing children to the difficulties that we're going to face in life, whether emotionally or intellectually, that's progress. That's how it carries on by way of awareness and interpretation of mental health and mental illness. That's what I meant by that. I don't mean by, you know, any exception that, yeah, listen, I walked in the park, everything's going to be a lot better. I'm talking about the undercurrent of emotion there that gives an opportunity to explain to particularly younger people, because we didn't have that when we were younger. And that's the benefit of it. It's, and that's why it works. Integrity, compassion, warm-heartedness. And to extend an expression of that when darkness into light finishes. That's why it works. That's what I meant by the conclusion of the previous segment, and I hope that makes a little bit more sense. I think to speak of integrity, it's, you know, it's interlinked with so many things that kind of inspire me and take me along in my own journey. And I think, you know, we talk about inspiration. I think it and often question we. You either ask or receive in relation to sort of influence and inspiration is who inspires you. And I think that question sort of needs to be rephrased. I think when we think of who, I think we're looking beyond the person. We're looking at characteristics and personality traits as to what actually you delve into and what inspires you that way. I think the question I like asking if having this type of conversation with somebody is, you know, what inspires you? What exactly inspires you? And I know for me, you know, there's individuals in my life that I certainly look up to, and as mentioned in terms of those characteristics. But for me, there's two things sort of overall, and that's sincerity and creativity. And, you know, I think maybe to explain that in a bit more detail, and an example I do like to give is you see a beautiful painting.
you know, it's obvious, there's an obvious creative overtone to it. It's very easy to appreciate because you know that the artist, the painter, has put a serious amount of effort into it, has committed to it, with time and effort and ultimately patience. And it's easy to see that this guy has been sincere in his approach. So those two things tie in together. It's a work of art for that reason. It's very easy to appreciate. And it's deposing in every day kind of manner, I think, you know, sincerity. If you know somebody is giving everything, if they're honest and sincere in what they do, whether it's in a work, sport, or a relationship, that's easy to appreciate too. And it's easy to look at and say, right, if I can work that angle to myself, to similar, you know, endeavours in my own life, that'll take me further down the road and make me a better person. I think the traits we admire in people are often the ones we maybe aren't confident in or self-conscious in within ourselves. So I think those two things, creatively, sincerely, whether in art or just inside a person for what they do, is very easy to appreciate and very inspiring, from my own half anyway. So to look closer at those two things collectively, sincerity and creativity, and elements of them that I've really not forced upon myself, but I suppose have been forced upon me, but with welcome, is through the terrace of film and music. I think they're always a good place to start, especially with a discussion about art. And there's one that stands out automatically for me over the last couple of years, and that's the film This Is England by Shane Meadows. Fucking unbelievable. Which followed on then to a series based over a couple of years that sort of followed after the film. Some of the best fucking acting I've ever seen in my life. And I mean that, like the character, the emotion. It just jumps out of telly at you, and like the flaws and the difficulty and just the warm-heartedness behind all the bullshit that these people suffer. Like, you just want to hug them all. It's fucking amazing. I can't emphasize that enough. If you haven't seen them, heard of this, or heard of Shane Meadows, who's all of his work is just grim, bitter, grey, sort of gritty, true-to-life kind of problems and issues that that would have affected people, not just throughout the 80s in England, but he sort of works his work right through to 90s, and he bases a lot of his work Midlands in England, working-class areas. But just the character's amazing. So to scroll back, the film itself is about a young boy called Sean who's lost his father in the Falklands War. This particular film is based in 1983. So Sean he's kind of suffering, you know, an identity crisis. He's in search of himself. He's in search of a father figure. And he's been bullied in school. He's a bit lost. But he finds himself kind of part of a gang. These sort of naive skinheads. You know, rascals, harmless, just growing up, no real sort of nastiness to them, but the progression in the movie, it takes a sinister turn with the introduction of Stephen Graham's character Combo, who's just his bigot, you know, this absolute, complete and utter racist, driven on by his own insecurities and his own experience. And Sean, in his, you know, place of vulnerability, buys into what Combo gives him because he feels it gives an explanation to justify his anger at his father's loss. And that's where the journey sort of follows. It's that rite of passage and a tunnel of masculinity that Sean goes through. And it's mind-blown. It is just, it's beautiful. It's tragic. And it grips you. This Is England by Shane Meadows. Go check it out. So an appropriate segue in discussing This Is England is the film soundtrack, which is, man, it's jazzy. It's quality. Some classic tunes on there that you'd know and love. But there's one artist, one piece of music in it that just, my God, it massaged my inner self. It just gripped me. There's a montage scene in the movie halfway through, and it's the growing of the relationship between Sean and Combo, as he's I suppose he's teaching him and influencing, and it's quite tragic, as you can just see the delight in Sean's face, unbeknownst probably that what he's buying into is just, it's just fucking harrowing. Fascist idealism that is at such a young age doesn't realise where it's going to take him to. But there's music playing over it, and I watched this movie on Film 4. It was a TV release, and like, I shot bolt upright with this tune. It was a song called Fiore del Mondo, which is Italian for Out of This World, by a piano player called Ludovico Einaudi. And you're probably saying, who the fuck is that? You'd be amazed, you'd know this guy. A lot of his music features in adverts and a lot of montages on TV. When this started, and this was pre-Shazam, pre-smartphone. Shazam, is that? That's the one where you play the music and it tells you what the song is. I think I'm right. I am right, Shazam. I don't even know where that's still going. But anywho, there was just me and my emotion sitting there taking this in. Just the song itself, first one I ever heard, it's just this somber euphony. Like, it's just so seductively despondent. Like, I love that with music. I think we all do, how our emotions adhere to music. You know, whether it's upbeat or just fucking depressing. But this particular piece, and it was probably grandized by the actual montage itself, which is full of emotion. It fucking blew me away. And when I speak about mental health, when I speak about kind of my own form of meditation, Ludovico Einaudi has played an integral part of that in 10 years. And I was only introduced to him because of this film. So I think at the end of the movie, I watched all the credits to find out who this guy was. And that's where I came across the name. And beautiful, just absolutely beautiful piece of music. Ludovico Einaudi, check him out.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.